The first time Elizabeth Lesser's sister Maggie was diagnosed with cancer, she beat the disease and went into remission. But it returned a few years later. Doctors told Maggie that the only way she could survive the disease a second time was through a bone marrow transplant. Elizabeth Lesser, the co-founder of the Omega Institute, was her sister's genetic match, but it was not a guarantee that Maggie would survive. In her new book, Marrow, Elizabeth writes that the donation led the two to explore their often tense relationship. While they leave the bone marrow transplant up to the doctors, they take on what Lesser calls a soul marrow transplant, examining their family history, having difficult conversations, examining old assumptions, and offering forgiveness. And it is a great pleasure to welcome Elizabeth Lesser to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us. A delight to have you on the program.
Thanks for having me.
The book is absolutely beautiful, and I assume that it is not at any point something you expected to write. So what is it like to tell a very personal story to a wide audience so that we get something out of your very personal experience?
Well, I've always written memoir because I know from having met so many thousands and thousands of people from my work at Omega that basically we are all the same. So I always figure that what's happening to me is going to happen to millions of people. And it's a way of being in community with fellow humans to write memoir. It's not the easiest thing in the world, but I do it because I know it's better to be together with each other through difficult times.
In telling the story of you and your sister, Maggie, let's just talk a little bit about the dynamics of the family. There were four sisters, and you were older than her, and you're what number?
Number two. I have an older sister and two younger sisters.
So obviously this had an effect on all of you, but you were the one who was the match.
Yes.
Give us a sense of finding out about the illness. As I mentioned in the introduction, your sister calls you, tells you that she has cancer, and then goes into remission. It's 7 years later, she's gravely ill, and then you find out that you are the match. What dynamics does that put in place, not just for you and your sister, but the whole family?
Yeah. Well, by that time, my parents were no longer alive. So it was just us four girls, as my parents always called us. And, a sibling society, four girls, there already was a lot of dynamics, as you can imagine. A lot of love, a lot of fun, and a lot of dynamics of jealousy and competition and triangulation. So it was like ripe for a lot of stuff to happen between us. My other two sisters were both relieved that they didn't have to go through being a bone marrow donor and slightly jealous and slightly not knowing how to penetrate this newfound intense closeness that Maggie and I were experiencing. Fortunately, all of us were able to deal with it in a mature and eventually very beautiful way.
You had a tense relationship with your sister, Maggie. I guess that's a proper word, a tense.
Sometimes tense, sometimes full of fun and connection. I would say less tense and more an accumulation of years of not really dealing with our differences and the ways in which we had dealt with each other that weren't always kind.
So that comes down to a lack of understanding on both of your parts.
Absolutely. And making assumptions about why each one of us had acted toward each other the way we did, as opposed to talking about it in the moment, clearing things. We had developed layers of assumptions.
Why do you think it is so easy for us in a family dynamic, but even in a life dynamic, to make all of those assumptions?
There's something in us that is frightened. It's the frightened child in us that maybe if I try to clear this with this person, they'll admit they don't love me. I'll threaten them. I need their love. I want their love. This isn't conscious in us. It's just almost a biological fight or flight type response, like that hurt. I don't want more hurt. I'm just going to try to paste over it, and maybe it will get better without me roiling the waters more.
When you found out that you were the perfect match, it seems as though for most of us, and yes, relationships are incredibly complicated, but that for most of us, it's okay. It's a no-brainer. I have to do something. I have to act. How quickly then, because time was ticking, your sister was gravely ill. So how quickly did you have to say, okay, I'm going to do this, but while we do this, we're also going to work on this relationship that we have with one another?
This all happened over a period of weeks. The event itself was strung out a little longer, but the decision-making to go ahead with the transplant had to happen within hours, actually, because my sister had to start the very intense chemotherapy that you have to do before a transplant right away, or literally she would not have lived for more than a couple of weeks. So they had to start the treatment right away. When I found out that I was the match, she was the one who had to make the decision. So do you want to go ahead with this transplant? Because I'm telling you, leading up to transplant almost killed her and almost kills most people. It's such intensive chemotherapy. She was the one who first had to make the decision, yeah, I'm in for the transplant. Then I had to make the decision, but I made the decision the minute I found out. I didn't need to be convinced.
Why then was it important for you, and was it equally important for her to work on the relationship, to make sure that even as you're going through this, while you don't know what the outcome is going to be, the health outcome, that you want to work on the relationship together?
I only wanted to do that because of what I discovered about the correlation between what our cells might do once they got together in her body, which was reject or attack. I only wanted to work on the relationship to see if we could teach ourselves a different way of being as opposed to rejecting or attack. I wouldn't have suggested it to Maggie if it hadn't been for that, because I didn't want to put any more strain or stress on her. But I truly felt from what I knew from the mind-body connection. I mean, if you have a cold and you flush your psyche with warm and good and peaceful thoughts, there's a lot of research that proves your immune system will respond to that just as much as if you take vitamin C or drink lots of water. There is a lot of research that proves that your mental state and your emotional state affects your body's capacity to heal. And since it was going to be my blood cells in her body, actually all of her stem cells would be killed off through chemo, all of her new marrow cells would be my cells, and then they would reproduce and become her entire blood system. I thought, well, I'm going to be swimming around in her for the rest of her life. I want us to get along like we're one being. Once I get in there, I mean, it sounds freaky, but this is the way my mind works. And I thought, hey, this may be cuckoo, but let's give it a shot.
So is there a point, even though this is life and death stuff, you're still sisters, you have a sibling relationship where your sister rolls her eyes and says, oh, here's Miss Omega.
Absolutely.
Yes.
Up to the point of us being in therapy together, we would both roll our eyes about each other. Here's Miss Woo Woo Omega. Here's Miss, like, practical Vermont farmer who, like, can't, like, stop doing a million things all the time. Just, like, slow down and just be with me. That was anathema to her. And We continued to be ourselves, but we developed much more of a loving, warm, large embrace of each other. That tendency to judge, reject, attack, I have to say, we dropped it. We dropped it.
You talk about assumptions and the assumptions that you made. For the most part, were the assumptions, I mean, not the details, but the issues, the overall issues of those assumptions, were they essentially the same?
Her assumptions of me and mine of hers?
Yes.
Well, my sister's assumptions of me through certain events we went through, in particular, when I got divorced, mm-hmm. and she didn't want to be around me much after that. It made her extremely uncomfortable. I didn't know why. I just felt so deeply rejected in a time of great need. I never said to her, "What's going on? I need you. Would you please be there for me?" No, for years, for 4, 5, 6 years, I just felt deeply hurt. I thought once again I had done something bad and wrong in the eyes of my family. That wasn't what was really going on for her. What was going on for her was she herself was in a difficult marriage, and what I did terrified her, threatened her. It made her uncomfortable because maybe she would have to look at some things in her own life that she didn't want to. So she just rejected me. Now, if the two of us had been able to get together and me to say to her, "You don't like me because I'm being a bad girl again, right?" And she would say, "No, not at all. You're doing something I actually need and want to do. It scares me." Do you see how we could have avoided years and actually been there for each other? I could have toned it down and not done things that agitated her. She could have loved me without feeling she was betraying her own marriage. This goes on all the time between individuals, groups of individuals. To take this metaphor all the way to the end, I really believe war is based on assumptions that could, in the presence of more conscious communication, be avoided.
And yet, you get the sense in reading the book that you never felt like there was time that had been wasted in the relationship, mm-hmm. that it led you to this moment and was necessary for mm-hmm. that communication to occur.
Well, that's the way I live my life. I don't spend a lot of time in regret or if only. It's kind of a fruitless waste of energy because it happened. And I do believe that everything that happens to us in life is not wasted energy or tragedy. Everything happens. We can use it. We can metabolize it. We can grow from it when we're ready, if we so choose. And so, no, we got to that point, and we made it a good thing. And for that, I have no regrets.
So with that said, of the way you live your life and not looking at any regrets, can you imagine what it would have been like had you not had the opportunity, and your sister, even with the first diagnosis, had passed without you coming to the terms that you came to?
Well, it would have been a much less rich life for both of us. That year my sister lived was such a rich time for her. Would I rather that she had lived and never gotten sick? Would I trade what I learned and she learned? Absolutely.
Sure.
I would way rather have her be here. I miss her terribly. But I am grateful that we chose to do what we did. It changed me. It changed my life for the better.
And obviously has an impact on the relationship you have with your other sisters.
Yes, very much so.
Who are still with you, and that you continue to work on those relationships all the time.
I do. Each one of my relationships with my sisters is different because we're all different people.
Yep.
My older sister and I have practically feel like we also did a soul marrow transplant without having to do the bone marrow transplant. We have cleaned everything up between us. I feel so grateful to our beloved little sister Maggie for, in the wake of her leaving us, she left me much closer to my other sisters, and I'm grateful to her for that. We all took up the cause of clearing up old assumptions between us.
Do you think about, through this, a lot about your mother and father and what they would make of the relationships and the discussions and how things would be different if they were part of them?
You know, they were from that greatest generation where talking about yourself or your inner process just was not done. And the whole idea of therapy and self-examination, it just was not in, they didn't do that. And I don't know what they would make of it. I feel them around me all the time, and I write about it in the book, that when I first found out that I was the bone marrow match for Maggie, I felt them both saying to me, you know, our love gave Maggie her first life. Your love's going to give her a second life. I felt them with me. Whether that's my rich imagination, which I have, or that truly is a message that came through them to me, I have felt them with me on this journey very strongly.
What do you hope ultimately people get from the book? And because there is your story, and there's also how this fits into your overall body of work at Omega and for you, Elizabeth Lesser.
I hope people take from this a sense, and to hold it lightly, it's not a heavy thing, but a sense that I don't have to wait for a life or death situation to attend to some of my relationships. I don't want people to feel I have to go out now and get in therapy with 72 people in my life, everyone at work, all my family. No, but some of our relationships can be sweetened and cleaned up and made better. And it doesn't have to be a big deal. But I think it's holy work. I think it's socially conscious work. I think it's something we can do for the world, to model to the world something other than rejection or attack in our friendships and our work relationships.
And the word for that is love, right?
That's why I called it a love story. I couldn't find a better word than love.
Again, the title of the book is Marrow, A Love Story by Elizabeth Lesser. She'll be at the Northshire Bookstore in Manchester Center, Vermont, tomorrow, Friday, the 23rd of September at 7 o'clock. She'll be at the Golden Notebook in Woodstock on the 10th of October at 7 p.m. And on the 13th of October, we'll be at Oblong Books in Rhinebeck. For more information on all those events, you can see the links that will be posted along with this interview at wamc.org/roundtable. Elizabeth, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.